How many times have I been spoken to by the Home Office about this? Zero. They don't care. I mean, they're abolishing PCCs anyway because they think we've just been a failed experiment. But the fact of the matter is, I think they've been out of power for so long they've forgotten how to behave properly with other ministers and shadow cabinet and so on. So even the local MP, Nusrat Ghani, wasn't contacted, wasn't kept in the loop, and the surrounding MPs as well. And it's been pretty shocking, actually, the way everybody's been treated. So we're doing the best we can, and more power to the people of Crowborough. I have so much respect for them. None of them are racist, and the panel, when they admonished me, inferred that I was racist because of some of the things I've said and turning up at the march and that. But by calling that to me, they're effectively saying everybody in Crowborough is the same. And the outpouring and public support I've had over the last 3 days has been quite actually overwhelming and very humbling. And it's been very, it's made me even more determined to do the right thing by the people of Sussex.
Understood. Well, look, we'll keep an eye on it. It's an interesting development, and we'll see what happens here. Katie Bourne, thanks for joining us from Sussex. That's it for me today. I'll be back at 1 o'clock tomorrow. But up next on Times Radio, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Andrew. It's 2 o'clock. Jane Garvey, Fee Glover here on Times Radio until four. What have we got?
In the next 2 hours, Downing Street has handed the police a dossier about alleged leaks by Lord Mandelson to Jeffrey Epstein. We will look into that and also investigate how Epstein was able to work his way into the world of the super rich. Does a wish in the Trevi Fountain still come true if it costs you €2? Should Russia be allowed back into international football? We will talk to Vassos Alexander. And can you run the London Marathon? And Emma B said yes to that question. More after 3:30.
Here's the news at 2, Stuart Willey.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Downing Street has sent a dossier of material to police investigating Lord Mandelson's alleged leak of market-sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein. Sir Keir Starmer told ministers at Cabinet that passing on emails was disgraceful, again saying the former business secretary should no longer be in the Lords. It comes as opposition parties call for more information on the vetting process ahead of Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the US. Sir Ed Davey is leader of the Liberal Democrats.
It's absolutely right, the police investigate. For someone right at the top of government to be leaking on a daily basis really serious issues, that's why I actually think, yes, he should obviously strip his peerage, there should be a criminal investigation. I think in due course we need a national inquiry, a public inquiry, into the impact on national security and indeed British victims of Epstein.
The police investigation focuses on whether Mandelson committed a criminal offence by leaking inside information. He hasn't addressed the specific allegation, but says he regrets his relationship with the paedophile. Legal commentator Joshua Rosenberg says the offence of misconduct in public office can bring tough penalties.
The current offence has a maximum penalty of life imprisonment. Now that sounds rather dramatic, and the reason for that is that Parliament has never laid down any sentence. I'm not saying you would get life imprisonment, but you could get a lengthy prison sentence if appropriate. What's proposed in the new offence and the maximum penalty for that would be 10 years.
The privacy watchdog has launched a formal investigation into Elon Musk's ex chatbot, Grok, after it was used to generate sexual deepfake images without consent. The probe by the Information Commissioner's Office is over data protection issues. In France, prosecutors have also raided X's office in Paris as part of a separate inquiry. X hasn't commented, but has previously described investigations as an attack on free speech. A 13-year-old boy has been arrested in Dorset in connection with an e-bike hit and run on a pregnant woman in Poole. The baby was born afterwards in hospital and remains in a serious condition. Greater Manchester Police say a light aircraft has crashed near Rochdale. Emergency services are at the scene. Two people are believed to have been on board. The rate of grocery price rises has eased to its lowest level since April. Market research firm Worldpanel says annual rises have slowed to 4%. And a 13-year-old boy who swam for 2.5 miles to save his family who'd been swept out to sea says he kept going by thinking positive thoughts. Austin Appleby managed to get to shore to raise the alarm after his mum and younger brother and sister got into difficulty off the coast of Western Australia. Austin explains how he made it to safety.
I think at one point I was thinking Thomas the Tank Engine, trying to get the happiest things in my head and trying to make it through. Like, not the bad things that will distract me and bring me out further. And at this time, the waves are massive and I have no life jacket on.
For a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Thank you, Stuart. Very impressive young lad there in that news bulletin. Thinking of Thomas the Tank Engine as well to keep himself going.
Just remarkable.
Very, very impressive. Right, good afternoon. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover here until 4 o'clock. You can join in 0333 003 2353. Here's what we've got. Kent County Council says it's really struggling to care for child migrants as Ofsted downgrades the council's children's services. It is a county council run by Reform. We're going to talk to an immigration lawyer about that in a moment or two. How did Epstein become such an important part of the grimy world of the global super rich? We'll talk about Rome charging tourists to pose by the Trevi Fountain, and a statue of Britain's youngest ever boxing champion, Teddy Baldock, once the pride of Poplar, has been pinched from East London. It's such a sad story, this. When you hear about Teddy Baldock's life, you will be infuriated, though probably not quite as cross as Teddy's grandson, who will be on the programme this afternoon just explaining why he is so upset about this. Sporty Vassos Alexander the Great is back by popular demand today. We're asking, should Russia really be allowed to return to international football? And in the health news with Dr. Sarah Jarvis, the middle classes who are driving a surge in ADHD diagnoses. Our big guest is Fee.
Emma B. So she is known to you probably as a DJ, all-round music lady. She is coming down three floors from Virgin Towers in Times Towers to visit us. But she's going to tell us about signing up to run the London Marathon. She is a cancer survivor. She had a whole lot going on in her life as well when she decided, yeah, I can put on some running shoes and run 26.2 miles. She's got a podcast out that you'll be able to listen to if you too are doing the event and need a little bit of company in your ears right up to the start line. But also, she's got some very interesting things to say, Jane, about a horrible incident she had when Wayne Cousins exposed himself to her many, many years ago. And she went to the police to report that offence. She didn't have the best of times when she reported that offence to the Metropolitan Police. And then she was sitting watching television, saw his face come up in connection with the murder of Sarah Everard and realised that that was the man who had exposed himself to her all those years ago. And of course, she is not the only woman to whom that happened. And she's got some very good things to say about what that kind of offence would tell you about a man and his behaviour and why it needs to be taken note of.
That is all a little bit later here on Times Radio. First, though, busy day in politics.
As you've heard, Downing Street is facing pressure to strip Lord Mandelson of his peerage. That after documents released in the US appeared to show him leaking internal messages from Number 10 to the paedophile financier Jeffrey Epstein. Now, those alleged leaks came when he was serving as business secretary in 2009. Our political editor, Anna Mihailova, has this breaking news update for us.
The Cabinet Office referred the matter to the police today and says it is ready to cooperate with any investigation. It's understood that the Cabinet Office has gone through the original emails, the original government emails that Peter Mandelson is alleged to have forwarded to Jeffrey Epstein, and has now sent a summary of those emails to the police as part of its referral, and is ready to stand by and send any more details if asked. The Prime Minister also chaired Cabinet this morning and started it off by talking about Peter Mandelson and everything that's emerged from the disclosure of the Epstein files in America. He'd described the alleged passing of emails, government-sensitive emails, as disgraceful. And he also said he was gobsmacked by the statement by Peter Mandelson that he can't recall the large amounts of money that the disclosures in America suggest Epstein sent him. The Prime Minister specifically talked about this and said that any politician saying they can't recall large amounts of money just erodes trust in everyone and the whole of politics. And he was clearly personally very affronted by that. He has also tasked officials to draft legislation to strip Peter Mandelson of his peerage. This is something that the government was resisting doing yesterday. Their position clearly could not hold. There was a lot of talk from opposition that they would start moving their own legislation. But now that has changed and officials are now working at pace, according to Downing Street, to draft these laws. We expect some movement in the next few weeks. And separately from that, the government is also looking at how the laws can be reformed, because the Prime Minister has said that he thinks it's ridiculous that he cannot remove peerages in cases of peers coming into disrepute.
That's Anna Mikhailova, who has rushed to get us that very latest update. What will happen next? Well, whatever it is, you'll hear it here on Times Radio. And also a simple question, Jane, would you notice the £75,000 turned up in your bank account? I mean, it is astonishing to say that you simply don't notice it.
I'm with the Prime Minister here. This is the bit that gets most ordinary. I would class myself as ordinary
people. Because it's the bit that we think, OK, well, if I was in that situation, because so many of these other things, these other places that other people have gone to, we can't begin to imagine being there.
But we can imagine being desperate for cash. What we don't usually do is be able to pick up the blower and ask a mate to send us. I think Sarah Ferguson she had form, didn't she, for just asking for help.
I don't think you want to be sitting next to her at a dinner party.
Well, not unless you've got 20 grand you're prepared to give her to pay her rent, apparently, allegedly. But yeah, I mean, this business, I mean, of course people would notice. Normal, ordinary, law-abiding folk do remember when a friend gives or loans them $75,000 or pounds. We just do. No wonder the Prime Minister is
gobsmacked.
Absolutely gobsmacked. Let's just welcome gobsmacked into the language of our governing classes.
Well, it's quite a fruity lexicon out there at the moment, isn't it? As you can imagine, Mandelson is in the top three most read stories on the Times website today. The other two, though, for your information, Cristiano Ronaldo's strike action could signal end of time in Saudi Arabia. The 40-year-old is considering leaving Al Nassr. He reportedly refused to play over his disappointment at the lack of investment in the squad. And the other big story that you're reading today, nearly 40% of Stanford undergraduates claim they're disabled. I'm one of them. One of the most prestigious universities in America offers perks to those who say they have ADHD, night terrors, or even gluten intolerance. One student tells the Times, "You'd be stupid not to game the system." Well, I don't like jelly beans on a Wednesday, so maybe I'll apply. You can read all of those articles on thetimes.com. You need your digital subscription. If you don't have one, get one. Go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
I mean, I'm very nervous around gristle. Perhaps I should apply to Stanford.
I don't like a sinew.
No, exactly. You can take part in this, whatever it is. 0333 003 2353. It's worth saying today that Prince Edward was at a conference. I did make a note of the name of the conference. It was a new one to me. World Government Summit in Dubai. And he was asked by a journalist how he was coping in the light of the Epstein files release. And I'm just going to give you a verbatim quote from Prince Edward, the Duke of Edinburgh, isn't he now? This is it. "Always to remember the victims. And who are the victims? Lots of victims in this." So Prince Edward, and that's being sort of widely reported as another member of the family chips in. I don't think he chipped in of his own volition. It was because he was asked about it directly at that summit in Dubai. Right, let's move on. 2:12. And there are other stories around, well worth discussing. Kent County Council is calling for help from the government of what it says is the unfair cost of looking after child migrants. It paid more than £41 million on care for asylum seekers last year, and that is almost double the spend of the second highest spending council in the land. Ofsted has now downgraded the rating given to Kent's Children's Services, which had been deemed to be outstanding. The Reform-led council says it's all because of unprecedented demand from small boat arrivals and child refugees in particular. Well, Harjap Singh Bangal is an immigration lawyer. Good afternoon. Welcome to the programme. Do you represent children who've been involved in all this in Kent?
Yeah, occasionally all across the country. Asylum lawyers, immigration lawyers like myself represent a lot of children, or many children, who have come here unaccompanied.
And there is no doubt that there is a cost to be borne, and that cost is borne by the local council. So this is hard on Kent, isn't it? Tell me why that's not the case.
Well, actually, every council has its budget, and it's up to them to perform within that budget. And there's a dispersal scheme, so it's not that every minor ends up in Kent. So it's dispersed. Hampshire gets them, Manchester gets them, London gets them. Everywhere, every county in the country gets their fair share. And it's down to that council to manage with the funds that it has.
Okay.
And previously it has been doing.
I take your point, but when you look at the figures, it does seem that Kent is spending £41.6 million. Hampshire, you're absolutely right, does have a responsibility to child migrants. It's spending £24 million. Manchester is spending £23 million. So why is Kent spending £41 million? Is it because housing costs in that part of England are just really high?
Possibly. Kent's, compared to Manchester and Hampshire, Kent's not a cheap area. Kent is expensive. It's right next to London. Some parts of it actually fall into London, such as Orpington, etc., and all of South London, you have the area. So rents are, you know, expensive there. Costs are expensive there. Staffing is expensive there. And it doesn't help when councils also mismanage funds. I mean, recently there have been reports about Kent Council employing advisors and paying them to try and find where there was excess spending and actually turning up not much.
Yeah.
In relation. So those costs have gone. And the infamous this week, the parking costs for £600,000 that they've spent for eight of their senior councillors for car parking, whereas the other half staff have to pay £4 an hour.
Right. I mean, that does seem remarkable. They did make an attempt at DOGE, as you referenced there, and you're quite right, it didn't work, did it? But that effort in itself will have cost them money.
Of course, everything costs money, especially advice from professionals. And the confidence of which perhaps Reform went in and said, well, hold on, there's loads of wastage here. We're going to reduce this and we're going to get rid of this. And actually found out it's a bit more harder to run a council than perhaps it does look like when you're not in a power or not, you know, in charge of a council. But once again, other councils do manage and of managing within their budget. So Reform should look at them and see how they're managing. And remember, it's not that duly unfair. It's not as if every single miner ends up in Kent.
No.
And there's about 3,000 miners that come in a year.
Right.
So if you divide that by the number of counties, then I think you'll find that perhaps they can manage.
But I think the leader of the county council has said that some of these people can be in council care until they're 25 because the system, the asylum decisions, are so slow. Does she not have a point there?
That is definitely something we've been saying regularly on this radio station and regularly throughout my career, that an asylum decision shouldn't really take more than a week to be decided. Yet there were under the previous government and even under this government to some extent, although it is clearing them now quickly, there was a massive backlog of cases which were just left on the shelf. You might remember an infamous case where people went into a warehouse and just found stacks of files just sitting there under the previous government. And there were just 100,000, 150,000 cases without even an initial decision or waiting a year for more than a year for a decision. That is despicable. That is not on. If anything needs investing in, it's the Home Office and to get this backlog cleared and to get decisions dealt
right.
with.
So are you confident at all that the staff have been hired to get that process underway?
By the Home Office, not much really. I don't have much confidence in that, in an institution which MPs themselves every year tell us in a Home Affairs Select Committee report that the institution is not fit for purpose. It's all an investment might do is paper up the cracks. Now, if you use that money to knock the system down and rebuild it, we might get some headway. However, what we often find is that staff are not well trained in law, in fact, hardly any training, There was a year when gap year students were making asylum decisions, which are very hard and complex to make and involve legal knowledge to make. You know, there's absolutely no training given before you go on the job. And like I said, it takes a long time for them to decide a claim. The average caseworker a month deals with about, should be dealing with about 8 to 10 claims a month. However, they're hardly knocking out with to three.
Right.
So that's the speed at which they're going. This whole institution, instead of being critical, if we behaved like that in a private business or had that sort of rate of working, we'd be sacked. If you did that in your job, if I did my job, instead, their managers and the Home Office leaders are getting bonuses for doing a bad job. I just don't understand why this Home Office is such in a state of disrepair and why the priority of this government isn't to have a functioning system.
Right. I mean, obviously, it's not entirely their fault. They have only been in government for a relatively short time. But
yeah, of course,
I do understand what you're saying. I wonder if you could just briefly just humanise all this for us, because we talk about these child migrants en masse and you must meet them and talk to them, and they've got hopes and dreams just like the rest of us. What is their life like, if you could generalise about it?
Well, some of them come from war-torn countries where their families have been killed and they've had no option. Their relatives have then refused to take them in. They've been trafficked. They've been used, exploited sexually, physically, tortured mentally and physically. They've been sold around, used around, very much as in child exploitation cases. They've been trafficked. And then in the end, they've been put on a boat or they've been put on a lorry to go and make a better life. Or they've just had to flee from, because everywhere they've gone to, children are exploited in the world. We see that now. Nothing's more relevant than that currently as we're watching the news on a daily basis. And a world which should prioritise protecting children shouldn't be arguing or treating them like a hot potato and saying, right, it's your responsibility, it's not mine. Actually, it's this country's responsibility. Kent County Council is moaning because it's saying, well, asylum seekers land in Kent and therefore we bear the brunt of it. Yet the same people are saying, well, why don't they all stop at Germany? Why do they filter down to us at all? The asylum system has to work universally. Otherwise, it would collapse. And that's what essentially is doing. These poor children are coming across, and some as young as 11, 12, lost everything. They're not sent away by their parents. No parent sends their kids away unless they're in extreme danger or unless they want immediate safety. And I'm a parent, I don't know if you used to are, but I'm sure, you know, you would feel, every listener here would echo that sentiment. There must be real dire situations. And these people, kids aren't coming here to work. They don't want to exploit your system. They don't want to stay in hotels. They just want to be protected and be offered the protection which their governments have failed to give them.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon. Harjap Singh Bangal is an immigration lawyer.
Coming up, we're going to change direction completely. Should wishes made at the Trevi Fountain come at a price? You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wickes. It's 21 minutes past two. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all of the sale offers at wickes.co.uk, or why not just pop into your local Wickes store?
Kate Borsay on Times Radio.
As we comb through more of the latest Epstein files, the big political brain that is Adam Bolton joins me to assess the impact on UK politics. The former US ambassador to Colombia, Kevin Whittaker, will talk to us about how Colombian President Gustavo Petro will navigate his meeting with the US president. And with us to make sense of the news, Michael Binion, the former diplomatic editor of The Times, and Ella Whelan, columnist at Spiked Online.
Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio.
Life is short. The world is big. See more of it with Wild Frontiers. Experience the soul of Georgia through traditional winemaking. Find your Zen on ancient pilgrimage routes in Japan. Or enjoy a 1,000-star experience in a yurt camp on the Silk Road. Wild Frontiers' expertly crafted journeys take you further, so you can wander often, wonder always, and worry never. For small group tours and tailor-made adventures, visit wildfrontierstravel.com.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
Listen to Times Radio at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. The experts in bathrooms. From a shiny new tap to a full bathroom renovation, Wix has everything you need for every style of home. Browse thousands of bathroom products at wix.co.uk.
If you're hoping to strike a pose for your Vogue moment, can you see what we've done there? In front of the Trevi Fountain, you better have some coins at the ready. Rome's €2 visitor fee to access the landmark's viewing area has now come into force to help manage the numbers of tourists and to fund the monument's upkeep. Tom Kington is our Times contributor in Rome. Tom, very good afternoon from us in London. Are people up in arms about this?
Well, I was there yesterday, and I think most of the tourists were okay with it. After all, €2 is the price of a cup of coffee. And but there were people hanging a bit back from the fray who were not ready to get in line. And they were saying, look, it's a bit odd that I have to pay money to throw money into a fountain. Kind of takes the charm off it. It sort of ends that sort of that idea of it being a sort of spontaneous fun thing to do as you pass by this fountain. Why does everything have to be monetized at the end of the day? So it was, you know, there were both versions you were hearing at the fountain.
Is it true, Tom, that you're meant to stand with your back to the Trevi Fountain and throw money over your shoulder in order for the wish to come true?
I can't remember. Whoever said that probably made it up anyway. I think, isn't there an old film where that is set out? And I don't know if you're meant to actually stand. Most people actually do, come to think of it, they do turn their back to the fountain, which often means actually that if you're standing in the way, you get a coin in your eye because it's a little more difficult to aim. So perhaps they should have added that to the kind of, you know, the legend: stand with your back turned to the fountain and send someone to hospital.
Now, quite a few of our listeners, Tom, want to know where you can get a coffee for €2 in Rome.
Well, when I said that, actually, I was exaggerating, because if you're standing up at a bar in Rome and you're knocking back an espresso without sitting down, because you pay a bit extra when you sit down, if you're at the standing up at the bar, I think you can pay about €1.20.
So really,
it's not even €2.
Right, we're going to head there because that is considerably cheaper than London's coffee at the moment, Thomas. Anybody ever done the follow-up piece and actually tried to work out how many of the dreams and wishes made at the Trevi Fountain have ever come true?
Well, I think that more than anything, the legend is that if you throw the coin in, make a wish, you will one day return to Rome for a second trip. I think that's the big thing. So you will ensure that you come back to Rome. And I think that's probably true for people. They quite like Rome when they come. They fall in love with it and they do say, I will come back. They try and come back. So I'm going to say that it does work.
Okay. So it's a habit originally sponsored by the Italian Tourist Board.
Absolutely.
It's a very canny one, isn't it? Can you just describe, because I've said it's a viewing area. So if you're going to turn up at the Trevi Fountain, what will now happen to you? You get kind of cordoned off if you want to chuck some money in.
Well, when you get into the piazza around the fountain, there's a public area that you can still be in, and that gives a very good view of the fountain. But there's also a set of stairs that surround the fountain and that take you right down to the sort of gushing basin. And that's where most people want to get that really perfect selfie. That's fenced off. It always has been, but you've been able to just sort of walk in because there's an opening. Now that opening is cordoned off. That's where you have to pay the guy who's waving his card machine at you. And you can get in line there. It'd be interesting to see what happens in high season during the summer. The queues may be going off down the street. We may get a bit of argy-bargy But yesterday, actually, you know, it's January, it's low season. It wasn't too bad. But I think we need to see if there are more riots this summer.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be two prongs to this, won't there, Tom? One will be to try and make a bit of money, but presumably to also try and reduce numbers, because Rome is not the only city in the world that finds itself inundated with visitors, and sometimes maybe too many people in too few places.
Well, I think everyone admits that this is not going to cut numbers. And we've already seen, for example, in Venice, where on busy days you have to pay €5 to actually get into the city. It doesn't seem to have cut numbers. So you've got what officials were telling me yesterday is, no, this is all about just making things a little bit more regimented so you don't get mob scenes. Plus, it gives us some money to help with the upkeep and to field a team of stewards who can help stop drunk tourists climbing on the statues and chucking themselves into the fountain, which does happen quite a lot.
Right. What used to happen to the money that was chucked into the fountain?
I think that went to Caritas, which is a Catholic charity. That's what they said, although for many years there was a man whose nickname was D'Artagnan for some reason, who used to come by and try and scoop up all the coins before the city cleaners could get to them. I think that he may have retired now. And so, most of those coins, I think, go to help the homeless in Rome.
Right. Have you chucked the odd coin in there, Tom? I mean, you're stationed in Rome, so you can't really expect to get sent back to Rome. You just don't leave Rome.
I don't need to throw money in. I'm already here.
Okay. And you can't make a different wish? You have to. It's only going to be coming back to Rome?
Well, you got me thinking. Come back to me next week. I'll let you know what I've decided to wish for.
Okay. It's a dangerous question to answer, really, isn't it? Tom, it's always lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Tom Kington is our Times contributor in Rome. Have you visited the beautiful city? Have you chucked money into the fountain?
Yes, I have. And I'm still thinking about a beautiful bowl of ravioli I had there.
Okay. And have you returned there once? No. Well, then it didn't work, did it? What a waste of money.
Yes, damn. Julie says, it's a minor point, but wasn't Mandelson not a serious contender for the post of Chancellor of Oxford University? I think he was. He was in the running, wasn't he? That was a close call for the uni. It would have been appalling to have somebody of such dubious morals mixing with the undergraduates. It's all allegedly here, Julie, of course. Perhaps the university also needs to tighten their scrutiny of potential candidates in future. Okay, thank you for that. And Claire says, please don't refer to us as ordinary people when discussing the Mandelson case. We're all the top of the pile because we're decent. The likes of his type, I think they're at the bottom, says Claire. Right.
That's a good point.
It is a good point. I mean, ordinary people's a silly phrase, isn't it?
It's like normal people, real people.
Yeah.
That's
yes.
Us.
Yes. Journalists are always going out desperately trying to find some real people. And surprisingly, real people, when they spot a journalist, hair off into the distance at about 150 miles an hour. Now, next on Times Radio, we'll talk about a statue of a boxer. He was known as the Pride of Poplar. And his statue has been stolen. And when you hear about this man and his life, you'll be as enraged as I was. Honestly, it's just so awful that somebody, a pair of idiots presumably, have pinched this statue. So more on that in a moment. You're with Times Radio. It's just after 2:30. Here are the headlines. Stuart Willey.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. Downing Street says the Prime Minister has asked officials to draft legislation to remove Lord Mandelson's peerage as soon as possible. Sir Keir Starmer told Cabinet colleagues the former ambassador let the country down by allegedly sending sensitive government information to Jeffrey Epstein. The Cabinet Office has sent a dossier of information to police investigating the leaks. Meanwhile, Prince Edward has become the first senior royal to comment publicly on the Epstein file release. Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor's brother, was asked about it at a summit in Dubai.
Well, with the best will in the world, I'm not sure this is the audience that is probably the least bit interested in that. But no, I think it's all really important always to remember the victims. And who are the victims in all this?
A new investigation's been opened into X over sexual images created by its Grok chatbot. The information regulator is looking into whether Elon Musk's companies complied with data protection laws. A review into the death of Harvey Wilgoose in a Sheffield school last year found 130 incidents involving his killer were missed. Mohammed Umar Khan had been seen with a number of weapons in the months before the 15-year-old's death. And around a million people may have missed the self-assessment tax deadline and face a £100 penalty. HMRC says 11.5 million returns were received, with 500,000 taxpayers waiting until the last day. Don't forget, you can set the Times Radio News Briefing as your news service on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
What is it that makes a Fred Olsen cruise feel like no other? Perhaps it's the awe-inspiring destinations that will stay with you forever. Or our ships that are small in size, but big in character. It could be the wonderful people you meet along the way. Or our extraordinary crew. Maybe it's all of these things together. But if you really want to know what a Fred Olsen cruise feels like, there's only one way to find out.
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots.
They have to like arts and crafts.
Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to GOSH Charity. Search GOSH Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
Romantic retreats, luxury beachfront hotels, expansive family villas with sensational sea views. Not lots of, just the very best of. Simpson Travel, the magical destinations you love, the personal service you expect. We visit every one of our properties so we can handpick the perfect holiday for you. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms. Wix local design experts are ready to help. Whether you start with an in-store design consultation or with a free home measure, it's completely up to you. Find out more about the free design service at wix.co.uk.
John Pienaar takes over from us at 4 o'clock. I guess Peter Mandelson is still going to be where you start.
Yeah, that's right.
Who will
that's
you talk to?
So, look, while you know the sort of swirling argument goes on, we're waiting for the police to decide, are they going to launch a criminal investigation into the leaking of this sensitive, incredibly sensitive information? And look, been taking some soundings, maybe it comes down to just proving that he wrote these emails that he says he has no recollection of writing. I mean, interesting, because at Westminster, they seem to have reached that decision already. I mean, to the point that Downing Street are saying they're going to bring in legislation to kick him out of the House of Lords. But meanwhile, the police are still looking at whether they should launch an investigation. So what are they going to be looking at? What's going to be in the way of that? I'm talking to Max Hill, who's a former director of public prosecutions, and getting political soundings from Labour MPs. I'm talking to the SNP's Stephen Flynn, who's been very vocal on this. And there has been another really, well, just interesting development just this afternoon, because Donald Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, has given a news conference airing the possibility that Jeffrey Epstein, who was flying young women in for parties with his rich and powerful friends, was linked with the KGB, was a KGB asset. Now, that just deepens the whole thing, doesn't it? Because if that was, in fact, the case, well, then Peter Mandelson is accused of leaking political intelligence and market intelligence from high in government to someone who it is suggested might have been a KGB asset. Now, that doesn't, you know, involve Mandelson knowing anything about that, if it's true, but it does rather complicate the whole thing. And we're going to be talking about that.
Just a swirl of stinkiness, isn't it, John?
A swirl of stinkiness is an absolutely perfect summary.
Thank you. John takes over from us at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, Ellen says, team, wasn't there some indication that Starmer was aware of Mandelson's links with Epstein when he was appointed as US ambassador? Well, yes. I mean, this is the thing that lots of people, well, we've been talking about it, haven't we? It's just a puzzle. Surely, when you're as old as me, and not for you, who's very junior to me, but slightly younger.
I'm younger, not
very
junior.
Much younger. This is the third time that Mandelson has has come out of the, you know, has had to resign, has gone off in disgrace, only to come back again, and he just keeps getting promoted. But I think he's probably had his final promotion, hasn't he? Let's face it.
Yeah, but also, Jane, I mean, even in terms of, you know, what's kind of considered to be wrong in politics, the mortgage that wasn't declared, yep, the money that had come from a colleague of his, yep, Geoffrey Robinson, and then the whatever it was about the Hinduja passports, you know, those are two things that I think most people, if you stopped the real people, the normal people in the street, and said this has occurred, they would go, okay, I've got a sense of whether or not that's right or wrong. You're in no kind of grey area over those things. So it does seem strange to us, doesn't it?
Yeah, that more questions were not asked, shall we say, by someone who, after all, had been the director of public prosecutions. I don't know. It's what a world. Keep your thoughts coming. 0333 003 2353. Now, this one is going to annoy you as much as it annoyed me when I spoke to our guest that you're about to hear that interview now. A bronze statue of a boxer called Teddy Baldock, who was once known as the Pride of Poplar, has been stolen from a park in East London. It was cut off at the ankles, leaving just its feet behind. Now, Teddy was Britain's youngest boxing champion. He won the bantamweight title, that's the world title, at just 19 in 1927. And a statue of him was put up in 2014 after £100,000 was raised in honour of him. Now, that fundraising effort was led by his grandson, Martin, who told me earlier how he felt about this theft.
I realise that on the hierarchy of crime in London, what I've lost is a, you know, it's an inanimate object, really. You know, if you've had your house burgled, or, you know, if you've been assaulted at all, then it kind of trumps it. But it's what that statue meant to myself and to the people of London, and particularly Poplar, really.
Tell us about where it was and how long it had been there.
So the statue was, it's just outside the Langdon Park DLR station.
Yeah.
It's opposite like the Spotlight Youth Club. It was unveiled May 16th, 2014. And it's particularly poignant. I did it in collaboration with Poplar Harker, a local housing association. They were involved with the Spotlight Youth Club. And they thought, what better to have, you know, a youth from Poplar who from very humble beginnings rose to the very pinnacle of his chosen sporting career. And it sits opposite the new modern Spotlight Youth Centre, which has a boxing gym on the second floor, which overlooks it.
Oh, right. So it was in exactly the right place. It all sounds incredibly appropriate. And I think probably now's a good time just to find out more about your granddad and about what he achieved.
So my grandfather, he came from Poplar, East London, from pretty humble beginnings. He turned professional, a professional boxer at the age of 14, which I know is pretty hard to believe in these days. By 17, he was already a top liner at the Albert Hall. At 18, he travelled to America to fight in the New York fight rings. He had 12 fights in the space of 3 months, so, you know, a fight a week. He won 11, drew one. He came back to the UK and was offered a 3-fight deal. If he won the first 2 fights, he'd be offered an opportunity to fight for the then-vacant world bantamweight title, which he won at the Albert Hall in 1927.
Yeah, and apparently crowds of people from Poplar went to the Albert Hall. They had loads of packed coaches.
Yeah, I believe, you know, packed coaches, people lining the streets outside. When he got married to my grandmother in 1931, and he was still boxing at that time, that was the year he retired. 4 different newsreel companies filmed the wedding, Topical News, Gourmand. Thousands of people lined the streets. Police were on horseback separating the crowd. So it kind of highlighted what a sporting icon he was from that era.
It's just also worth saying, I mean, I don't know a lot about art or statues, but I've seen images of this. This is a good statue. I mean, it really does suggest someone's sporting ability. Your granddad looks amazing.
As boxing statues go, Carl Payne, who unfortunately he died a number of years ago, at quite a young age, he did an amazing job. And I think one of the things that I was concerned about, he was working off black and white photos to produce the statue. And when me and my mum went up to his studios, my biggest concern is what happens if we walk in there and the clay model, it doesn't resemble what I have, the picture in my head. But, you know, when my mum saw it, she almost broke down.
Yeah, presumably your mum didn't ever see him fight because he had retired, hadn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very sad story. When he retired from boxing, he had very little to fall back on. He was obviously involved with the sporting crowds and he had a gambling habit. He was drinking. He ended up dying penniless on the streets of London. He did an article in the Sunday People about my mum, saying that daughter I dare not face. And what he used to do is when my mum, as a 14-year-old, worked in a stables in Woodford, if he had the money for a bus fare, he'd go up to Woodford and he'd stand behind a tree on a riding route just to get a glimpse of his daughter.
Oh, dear.
And she would never stop because although she knew it was her father, he was quite a dishevelled figure at that time. And he would never approach her because he was so ashamed of what had become of him. And then he'd go back to the pub, I suppose, if he still had the money for a pint. So it's a very sad story.
No, it really is. And I'm afraid, actually, in terms of sporting greatness, it's relatively common, isn't it, that people just fall from a pinnacle, they don't have the backup, and life really gets to them. So I'm so sorry to hear about that, Martin, but it makes the idiots who stole the statue even more reprehensible somehow, because you had organised for the statue to be built, to be put in this incredibly important and appropriate location, and now this. What would you say to the people who've nicked it?
You know, I've been asked this question, but I have nothing to say to them. You know, their conscience and their moral compass, it wouldn't make any difference what I had to say to them. You know, it's just like when someone makes a choice to burgle someone's house. They're not concerned about the repercussions of it or the impact of what they've done. All they want is the cash value for the scrap. Well, you know, I couldn't tell you exactly how much it's worth in scrap, but I have been told it will only be in the hundreds, more so than the thousands. So you've got a guy, a statue of a sporting icon who fought for a living for money, you know, to provide for his family. And then you've got these scum that have ripped it down for the sake of a few hundred quid. You know, I don't know how to put that in words, really.
No, well, you have done brilliantly. Have the police given you any hope at all?
So the police, I've got to say, the Met Police, they've been very good. I've just had a call off them, actually, just to say that they do have the CCTV footage of it, and they will be releasing that to the media within the hour. So there's a bit of hope. But obviously, as time goes on, the chance of it being melted down is probably greater because they want to get shot of it. I mean, my biggest hope is that it gets dumped and recovered because we can repair it. If it gets melted down, then we're currently looking for the moulds, so it could be perhaps recast. But because the sculpt has passed away, we're a bit unsure as to where those moulds are. And that's the worst thing about it is if those moulds can't be found, then it's kind of irreplaceable.
And what's the reaction been in Poplar?
Well, I mean, I can only go off the media, you know, the national media response. And I don't use X a great deal, but I did put a post off on it. And, you know, it's had 6,000 shares. And when you start scrolling through all the comments, yeah, you know, every one of them is either shock, anger. To be honest with you, there's more interest now in it having been stolen than there was in the actual unveiling itself. I'm quite amazed by the response from everyone, really.
That is Martin Sachs, the grandson of the boxer Teddy Baldock, whose statue has been pinched. If you haven't seen it, do go to thetimes.com. It's a bronze statue. It's in Langdon Park, where it was in East London. It's just really good, isn't it? Because some statues of sporting people are terrible, but this is one of the goodies.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But what's left is still beautiful, but when you know the story and what's happened to the rest of the statue, you know, that doesn't make up for the fact it's been pinched. But the feet are left, and the boots, they are, the yeah. boots, they are in a kind of evocative pose, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes, that's true, actually. So perhaps it's rather a poignant reminder of Teddy Baldock. But you just hope the whole thing somehow is rediscovered somewhere. It would be great if it happened. If you know something, you know what to do.
Yes, contact the police. They're busy at the moment, but they will get back to you. Coming up, does being middle class increase your chances of an ADHD diagnosis? You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide. Start your day with Times Radio's essential morning briefing. With intelligent conversation and incisive analysis from some of the most respected names in politics, culture and entertainment. Hear well-informed opinion and quality journalism on all the big stories making the headlines. Times Radio Breakfast, tomorrow morning from 6, with Nationwide, a good way to bank.
The Story, the award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It turns out you can please all of the people, all of the time. Garden games for the kids, a separate cottage for the grandparents, a private chef for that special occasion. Simpson Travel, idyllic Mediterranean holidays that everyone will love. We take care of the details so you can enjoy the moment. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots.
They have to like arts and crafts.
Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to Gosh Charity. Search Gosh Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Let's talk all things health now with Dr. Sarah Jarvis. We're going to start, Sarah, with the HPV vaccine. A quarter of young people are leaving school without getting it. It gives vital protection against HPV-related cancers for both sexes. So if it's available in schools, what is happening here?
Oh, I wish I knew. Unfortunately, we did have a drop during the pandemic, which, of course, is not surprising, and things just haven't gone back up. Now, what's really worrying is that, you know, the World Health Organization says basically most vaccines, you need 95% coverage in order to get true what we call community immunity. You used to call it herd immunity. And we haven't reached it for a single vaccine since about 2012, I think. Now, I think what we need to bear in mind here is that vaccine schedules now changed. So you only need one vaccine, not two. And if you get it, for instance, at 12 to 13, which is when you're supposed to, it can reduce the number of people getting cervical cancer by up to 87%. In fact, in Australia, unthinkably, in the last years they've got records, they did not have a single new case of cervical cancer. And that was basically almost, you know, that change to zero could never have happened without the vaccine.
Has it always been given to both boys and girls?
No, when it first came out, it was given to girls on the basis that if girls weren't infected with HPV and they were having heterosexual partners, then there wouldn't be enough pool, if you like, of HPV for it to spread around the community. But of course, it's not just cervical cancer that it protects against. And there was a catch-up program which came in some years ago for boys. It can reduce your risk not just of cervical cancer, it can reduce your risk of genital cancers, some head and neck cancers, including cancer of the mouth and throat. And of course, you don't get any protection if you're a man who has sex with men, when we weren't giving protection to men. So that's why it changed.
And do we know, in that figure of one in four school leavers not having it, what that balance is between boys and girls?
I don't think we do. My suspicion is it's probably fairly similar, fairly steady, because it tends to be that, unfortunately, in more deprived areas, you tend to have much lower uptake of vaccines. It may be that fewer boys are having it because parents don't understand that this isn't just a problem for girls. I sincerely hope it isn't. They are, interestingly, as part of the NHS, new NHS cancer plan, which is coming out tomorrow, they're talking about setting up, making it easier for young people to get vaccinated through, for instance, local pharmacies. So hopefully that will help as well.
Do you think that we haven't talked enough about what cervical cancer actually means, Sarah? Yeah. I think it's one of those cancers where, if you said to people, what are the symptoms, what do you go through, even what is the treatment, I think we're quite ignorant about it, aren't we?
Yes, we absolutely are. And it's really interesting that when you get, I'm sure all of us remember Jay Goody. When Jay Goody died, there was what we called the cervical cancer effect. And it was tragic, of course, her death. But it did dramatically increase the number of women coming forward for cervical screening. Now, you still need cervical screening, even if you've had the vaccine. But we hope that if we can eliminate it as a threat, then in future, we may even be able to get rid of cervical cancer screening programs. At the moment, of course, not everyone has had it. A lot of people who are eligible for the cervical screening program haven't had the vaccine. So we definitely still need to get it. But it was really interesting that we saw a huge bounce after Jay Goody's tragic death, because you're right, people did start talking about it and they realised that this isn't just something that happens to somebody else.
So if you think that you've missed the HPV vaccine, how much longer are you eligible to turn up somewhere and say, can I have it now?
The good news is that as a woman, you are eligible up until your 25th birthday. So you can get it up until you are 25. Until you turn 25, if you're a man who has sex with men, then you're eligible up until you're 45.
Right. Get to a doctor if you are concerned. Let's talk about resident doctors, Sarah, voting in favour of strike action for another 6 months after pay talks with the government once again stalled. What are your thoughts about this continuing threat of strike action?
At the beginning, I had a huge amount of sympathy for resident doctors. They're in very, very difficult positions. They're doing really tough, really responsible jobs. They've not long come out of training and, you know, during their degrees, because it's a much longer degree than normal, they are racking up tens and tens of thousands of pounds of debt. And they're really striking on the basis of two arguments. The first is pay. And the second is this huge bottleneck of getting higher training jobs. So people who've, you know, gone through all that training, who've worked in the NHS during their junior doctor years, their resident doctor years, and then they get to this bottleneck in training and there's sort of 30,000 people for 10,000 jobs. So, you know, there's a real chance that you're not going to be able to work having done all that training. And I do have sympathy for that. I have to say, in terms of pay, I think it's much more difficult because they have had pay rises of about 30% in the last 3 years. The BMA, the British Medical Association, says, well, they're still, in real terms, their pay is still a fifth lower than it was in 2008. But that has been a really, really big improvement. And I have to say that with so many other people struggling financially, I do find it a bit harder to have sympathy for them at that stage. And it's interesting that actually the turnout for the ballot was, I think, the lowest they've had. And actually, the number of people who voted in favour of all junior doctors, I think, was just under 50%. So about 53% turnover and 93% of them voted in favour.
Sarah, pause for just one sec, because we do have some breaking news about Peter Mandelson.
Yes, and it is that he is quitting the House of Lords.
More after the news bulletin, and probably in the news bulletin as well. We will obviously be coming back to that. Final health story, though, and this is intriguing. Middle-class patients are driving a surge in ADHD prescriptions as they seek a diagnosis in private clinics, and they're then turning up in the NHS to continue prescribing the drugs. Where does the fault lie here, Sarah? And, you know, a lot of people think that there is an over-diagnosis of this, that there is, you know, a way of living with ADHD that doesn't require medication. But from a clinical perspective, is there?
That very much depends, is the answer. Traditionally, girls have been hugely underdiagnosed with ADHD. ADHD, of course, stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And girls tended to have the attention deficit side. They sat at the back of the class, they daydreamed, and they weren't any trouble to their teachers. So they were much likely, less likely to get picked up than the boys who were more likely to be hyperactive. They were the troublemakers, and they were the ones where somebody, the teacher said, something's got to be done about them. So they were much more likely to be picked up. In the past, interestingly, there's been more prescribing for ADHD in deprived areas. Now we've seen a complete switch. Now, there's no question that there simply is not enough provision on the NHS. But, and I think this is a real but, when GPs prescribe for ADHD, it is very much a, this is a controlled drug that we're looking to be giving them. So the medications, for instance, methylphenidate, lixdexamfetamine, they're controlled substances. You need to be monitored really carefully, blood pressure, heart rate, weight, all sorts of things. And, you know, we do worry. We're not required to provide ongoing funding and ongoing prescriptions on the NHS for patients who were diagnosed in the private sector. And I think there's a real concern that if people have been diagnosed in the private sector, they may not be getting the same support, they may not have had the same quality of assessments, and that, you know, they're not basically getting the same support in terms of keeping that patient monitored, leaving the GP with a full burden of care, and they haven't got proper support. And then some private services have closed, so patients have been stranded. And we've also got the fact that some local integrated care boards, our ICBs and our local medical committees, often advise us not to enter shared care agreements with private providers, because we're saying, well, actually, A, we can't guarantee their quality. And sometimes they say, well, people are queue jumping. They're skipping the queue for NHS services, going into a private service, and then coming back to the GP and saying, now can I have follow-up treatment for the rest of my life on the NHS?
Thank you very much indeed. That is Dr. Sarah Jarvis. She is one of our resident GPs. And it's worth noting as well, isn't it, the flip side to this story about ADHD. It's the most read story on the Times website today, which is the suggestion that some students or potential students are using it as a way to get in to very high-rated educational establishments like Stanford, because they have a quota for neurodivergent students. And
the gluten intolerant, apparently.
The gluten intolerant as well. Yeah. So, I don't know, let's join the dots there.
Well, goodness me, I think it's time to enjoy some wonderful music. Here they are, Philharmonic, Times Towers Philharmonic, taking us to the ungodly hour of 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Gosh, it's a murky old February afternoon here in London. Hope it's a little better wherever in the world you are. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover until 4 o'clock. We are Times Radio. In the next hour, how Epstein wooed the super rich. The sport with Bassos. Should Russia be allowed to play international football again? And our big guest is the broadcaster and marathon runner, Emma B. Here's the news, Stuart Willey.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. It's been announced by the Lord Speaker that Lord Mandelson is to step down from the Lords. It comes as Downing Street sends a dossier of material to police investigating the former business secretary's alleged leak of market-sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein. Sir Keir Starmer told ministers at Cabinet that passing on emails was disgraceful. Opposition parties are calling for more information on the vetting process ahead of Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the US. Nigel Farage is Reform UK leader.
Not only did this man breach Cabinet confidentiality, but he leaked highly market-sensitive information. Fine. Talk about removing the title, but that really is, I think, a very small part of something that is much bigger, much more serious, and I'm not even sure that we know the full story yet.
Times Radio's political editor, Anna Mikhailova, says the Prime Minister has been personally affronted by Mandelson's actions.
The Cabinet Office has gone through the original emails, the original government emails that Peter Mandelson is alleged to have forwarded to Jeffrey Epstein, and has now sent a summary of those emails to police as part of its referral and is ready to stand by and send any more details if asked.
Meanwhile, the younger brother of the King and Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has become the first member of the royal family to comment on the files. Prince Edward told an audience in Dubai that people should always remember the victims. Elsewhere, the privacy watchdog has launched a formal investigation into Elon Musk's ex chatbot, Grok, after it was used to generate sexual deepfake images without consent. The probe by the Information Commissioner's Office is over data protection issues. In France, prosecutors have also raided X's offices in Paris as part of a separate inquiry. X hasn't commented, but has previously described investigations as an attack on free speech. It's emerged a school failed to act on 130 violent incidents involving a pupil who went on to kill a boy in Sheffield last year. An independent review commissioned by All Saints Catholic High School itself found missed opportunities to address Mohammed Omar Khan's behaviour. He'd been spotted with a knife and axe in the months prior to Harvey Wilgoose's death. His mum Caroline says her son deserved better.
We'll always be angry by what happened to Harvey, but more than anything, I'm determined to unite people, bring changes for the better. I'm determined that no other family should be sitting in court listening to how their child was killed.
The school has accepted the report's recommendations. A 13-year-old boy has been arrested in Dorset in connection with an e-bike hit and run on a pregnant woman in Poole. The baby was born afterwards in hospital and remains in a serious condition. And families of children with cancer in England are going to have travel costs to treatment covered by the government. Under the scheme, young people under 24 and those caring for them won't have to pay to get to appointments, which are often in specialist clinics far from home. For a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
It's 3 minutes past three. So that news that came in just a couple of moments before 3 o'clock, Lord Mandelson is stepping down from the House of Lords. The move was announced by the Lord Speaker.
My Lords, given the public interest and for the convenience of the House, I've decided to inform the House that the Clerk of the Parliaments has today received notification from Lord Mandelson of his intention to retire from the House, effective from 4th February. I will formally notify this to the House tomorrow in the usual way.
So no need to effect a change in legislation to get him out of the House of Lords. It comes after Keir Starmer asked officials to hand to police a dossier on alleged leaks from Lord Mandelson to Jeffrey Epstein. Documents from the US Department of Justice appear to show Mandelson forwarding Downing Street emails to him. Mandelson is just one of the network of powerful or vastly wealthy figures that Epstein interacted with. They include figures from European royalty, businessmen like Elon Musk and Richard Branson, political figures including Steve Bannon. So how does that world operate? Well, Simon Cooper is a columnist who writes about subjects including the super rich for the Financial Times. Simon Cooper, very good afternoon from us.
Hello, hi.
Are you very, very wealthy yourself?
No, I'm not. But as a Financial Times journalist, a lot of what we write about are the people who run the world, politicians and business people. So I've met some of these people. I've met Mandelson, for example. He invited me after reading a column of mine. We had a very nice chat in his office in Mayfair. And I think he wanted me as a kind of very minor cog in his enormous network. So I've had a lot of interactions with people in that world.
How would you describe him as a person?
He could be very charming. He was highly intelligent and he was ruthless. So most people believe in something. Most people in politics have beliefs that are right wing or left wing. I don't think Mandelson did at all. I think that partly because his grandfather, Herbert Morrison, had been a major Labour figure. He was aware of Labour as a place where you could, maybe they could win an election, he could acquire power, and he did, it worked out, and he made himself very useful within the machine. But unlike the people around him, almost all of them, he didn't really believe in anything, and so it made him very flexible, it made him very willing to push the party to do what voters wanted or what he thought voters wanted, and also it was for him a way to become rich, which was always very important for him.
How do you think he will be dealing with all of this now?
That network of super rich people to which he belonged is getting embarrassed. And many of their own, including Larry Summers, the former US Treasury Secretary, another Epstein protege who was lobbied by Mandelson for Epstein, people like Bill Gates, have been very embarrassed. And so I don't think they're going to kind of crawl towards each other. They're all crawling away from the mess. And people want to say, I had nothing to do with this. I think he's going to feel very alone.
Can we talk about feeling alone, actually? And I don't want to try and elicit sympathy on behalf of Peter Mandelson. I certainly wouldn't want to do that on behalf of Jeffrey Epstein or the people that Epstein seems to have been involved with. But is there an element of being super rich and super powerful that is actually lonely because you put up barricades around yourself to protect yourself, and therefore you lose that normal human connection that, apart from anything else, keeps the rest of us sane, keeps us humble, keeps us just getting up and going to work every day, keeps us normal?
You get a human connection, but it's a bit more behind closed doors with other people like you. So one thing that Epstein offered, I mean, he offered sexual access to adult women, to girls, whatever you wanted. But he also made you a member of this very exclusive club where you could all meet each other. So Epstein writes to Elon Musk and says, come to my island. Woody Allen will be there, somebody not from Musk's world at all. It will be fun. And so you meet a whole bunch of different people. Sometimes you're estranged from the people you grew up with. But there is a club of the super rich. And I think Epstein was for a long time the chairman.
Yep. And what also seems to have emerged from all of this, Simon, is that Epstein liked to have stuff on people, didn't he? So all of these people who went to his island, who went to his parties, who met girls, all of that kind of stuff, they appear in these kind of home-taken photographs in a way that does really suggest Epstein was very deliberately charting what happened around him just in case.
Yeah, and as I understand it, he also made a lot of voice recordings. So Epstein was a master blackmailer, and I think became so rich by blackmailing one or a couple of extremely rich Americans on whom he had sexual information. And they were obliged to give him a huge amount, you know, almost whatever he wanted because he could ruin their reputations. And so Epstein was always trying to dirty people around him. So you're invited in, he was very friendly, he was charming, you were at dinners, you met these fascinating people. And he was very good at working out, I think, what was your thing? And especially if it was illegal. Did you want a lot of prostitutes? Did you want to meet underage girls? And so once he had this on you, his hope was that he would be able to use it forever and that you would do favors to him. You would also give him access to your bit of the rich world. I mean, Epstein wasn't just motivated by money. He was also motivated by having power over the most powerful people in the world. And blackmailing was central to it. Mm. With Mandelson, it was a bit more difficult because he didn't seem to want sexual favors. But Epstein had sent him money and then Mandelson returned to government. So Epstein knows, look, this senior figure in the UK government and his husband have taken money from me, and that made Mandelson just always, always vulnerable. But in fact, Epstein didn't need to force his hand because Mandelson was so willing to work for him to be part of this rich world.
Yeah, these powerful people, perhaps we can understand all of those mucky connections just as you have so clearly explained them. But what are the other people around them? Because actually we have heard very little from the people who would have booked the flights, packed the suitcases, chauffeured the cars, other people who would have been at the parties. Is that all because of the power of the NDA?
I don't think it's just that. I mean, if you wrote an NDA with a convicted paedophile sex offender and then he's imprisoned and dies mysteriously, are you still bound by it when there's legal proceedings? I don't think it's that. I think that for a lot of these people, I mean, Epstein, I think, treated staff when he wasn't sexually abusing them or arranging for their sexual abuse. The others, the enablers, he treated well. They paid well. These people earned more money and had a more glamorous life than they'd ever had before, would again. The victims, these women who were trafficked by Epstein, they have, of course, some of them, taken legal action, and some of them are too traumatized. And those are the victims, but some of the lowly people who packed the bags, as you say, and collected them at the airports and drove him to the mansion and then lived in the mansion when he wasn't there, which is a very nice gig. There was a butler in Paris who had that in Epstein's massive Paris mansion. For these people, Epstein was a great guy.
Sure. Do you think something different happens from here on in because of the exposure through all of these emails that we are now seeing? You know, perhaps there was a time when people thought, I can send an email and it won't ever become public knowledge, but that time is not now. It's not ever now, is it?
Yeah, I think people are going to do less through electronic means. And if you really want to tell someone something, you're going to go for a walk in the park, like in the 1950s spy novels. I mean, when Mandelson and Epstein are emailing about payments in the early 2000s, at that time, you still thought, nobody knows what's in my emails. And then when Edward Snowden exposed that the US government was spying on everything in 2013, and now we know all big data companies know everything about you, and some other governments do as well, there's a naivety to those pre, let's say, 2013 emails that you would not really get now.
Can I ask you about the appointment of Lord Mandelson? Jane and I have been discussing just how far back some of his misdemeanours in the world of politics have gone. Why do you think Keir Starmer hadn't had exactly that conversation that ended up with, no, I don't think he's very suitable to represent this country as an ambassador in Washington?
I think Keir Starmer is a very naive man with very poor judgments of people. And a lot of the judgments are made by his aide, Brendan McSweeney, who is central to the Labour project. And I think McSweeney is overly impressed by cynical, ruthless Machiavellian people. He actually thinks they're
Morgan,
better.
Morgan McSweeney, yeah.
McSweeney, my fault.
No problem.
And so he thinks, you know, yeah, Mandelson, he's really ruthless. He's there's no heart there. He's always on the lookout for more. But you know what? We're not sentimental. We're not soft like old Labour. This is the Morgan McSweeney view. And so Mandelson is exactly the kind of guy we want there, penetrating the Trump system where it's all these tough people. Life is tough. I think that's very much an idea. Of course, if you deal with people who have twice been kicked out of government before for scandals, people who have no ethical compass like Mandelson, you're going to end up being bitten yourself. I think that's what's happened to Starmer and McSweeney. They were naive people who thought they were cunning and ruthless.
They appear to want to move at speed now with a dossier going to the police, and Lord Mandelson has formally retired from the House of Lords as well, under the threat of being kicked out, basically. Does that do enough in terms of damage limitation for the government, do you think, Simon?
You know, I don't really care about damage limitation for the government. I wrote a book about political corruption in the UK, Good Chaps, where I talk about how the UK is very vulnerable because it's still quite an important country, especially in 2009. It was the heart of the global financial crisis. But the people who run the system are cheap. You can buy them cheaply. He bought Mandelson for tens of thousands of dollars. And so Mandelson, at the heart of the global financial crisis in 2009, is doing Epstein's bidding, lobbying inside the British government at the top on behalf of banks. That's just a total disaster for Britain to have been in. So I'm not so worried about the effect it will have on the Starmer government. I'm worried about what it shows us of the power of often foreign corrupt interests at the top of our government. That's something we need to address very urgently.
Do you think that Epstein could have been a KGB agent?
You know, I've read some about this. I don't have enough detail. I think Epstein was clearly sympathetic to the far right project. Whether he was a Russian agent I don't understand that fully yet.
Okay, I mean, Donald Tusk has been talking about it today. I think he's the first current leader to actually come out and suggest that, Simon. So that's one to follow, certainly. Yes. But just a quick word from you on the royal family and where it leaves them. I mean, obviously, politicians and business people and academics were enthralled to Epstein, but so were some very stupid, greedy members of our royal family.
I mean, the royal family is a kind of example of the British disease. There's this thing, the royal family, that a lot of people in the world want a piece of, want to be involved with. And these corrupt people, they go to the stupider, more venal members and say, now, how much does it cost to buy you? And it's amazingly cheap. So Andrew sold his house to a Kazakh, very rich man, I think son-in-law of the former Kazakhstan president, for an inflated sale price. quite a while ago. That was a scandal in its time, now forgotten. So anyone who wanted to be able to say, oh, you know, I'm a friend of a British royal, or here is a British royal, here's me, a photo with a British royal, trust me as a business person, or the British royal will attend my business event. It was easy, it was cheap. And so we also have to control and discipline our royals, because they, including King Charles, who was taking money from Qatar for his charities, they are a conduit for foreign corruption inside the UK.
Do you get invited to a lot of parties, Simon?
I tend not to go to parties. As you may have deduced, I'm not. I like friends. I like going out with the friends I choose. I don't like hanging out at a party with a lot of irritating people.
Well, you're...
But I do not get invited to the kinds of glitzy parties that you're talking about.
No, but you're right to be spared. Really interesting to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. That's Simon Cooper. He's a columnist and he writes for the Financial Times and is also the author of a book called Good Chaps.
Very, very interesting. He'll be waiting a while for his OBE, I fear. Good luck, Simon. Really fascinating. Brendan makes a good point. I just wish they'd banished the term underage girls. They're children.
They are children.
No, you're right, Brendan. And so we won't let that one go in the future. Thank you for that.
You're listening to Times Radio. It's 18 minutes past three. Next, sports journalist Vassos Alexander is here. We're talking about the wonderful world of sport. Should FIFA lift its ban on Russia? It is 18 minutes past three. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sales now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit your local Wix store.
The State of It USA is the new podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times that brings you real truth about US politics and power. Join political heavyweights Katie Balls and Gerard Baker as they take a deep dive into the latest wrangles in the White House and bring you intelligent analysis and insight. No fake news, no flag waving, and no Trump derangement syndrome.
Fascinating week in Trumpland, MAGA-land, what used to be called the United States of America.
Just the inside track on the decisions that are shaping America. The State of It USA is available now on the Times Radio app or from your preferred podcast provider.
Romantic retreats, luxury beachfront hotels, expansive family villas with sensational sea views. Not lots of, just the very best of. Simpson Travel, the magical destinations you love, the personal service you expect. We visit every one of our properties so we can handpick the perfect holiday for you. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Let the design and installation experts at Wix help transform your home. Get started by booking a free kitchen or bathroom design appointment at wix.co.uk.
FIFA president Gianni Infantino says that Russia's ban from football should be lifted. Now, the war with Ukraine might well still be raging, and we've been seeing some terrible reports over the last couple of days about attacks on infrastructure and just how freezing cold it is in Ukraine at the moment. They are having such a tough time. But Infantino argues that the ban has achieved little beyond fueling hatred. He insists that someone needs to keep the lines open, despite strong resistance from other European countries and no plans for FIFA's council to actually vote on this matter, we should say. And he's also been busily defending FIFA's Peace Prize for Donald Trump, while also apologising for a joke about British fans. Right, yes. He's a bit of a plonker, Infantino, isn't he, actually, when it comes to it. Although, I actually felt that his comment about British fans was, I mean, we can't really claim that we aren't known on the global stage. And I'm talking here about England fans in particular.
Yeah, he
for
said,
hooliganism, let's yeah. just be honest.
So what he said last week before
yeah.
was that he was talking about how wonderful the Qatar World Cup was
yes.
On his watch. And he said,
Down to him,
can you believe it? He said, can you believe it? No Brits. His word, no Brits were even arrested yeah. for the first time ever. Extraordinary. And obviously, football supporters associations in England especially said, well, hang on a minute, Gianni, because we have done a lot to clean up our act. And in fact, I saw a statistic that in one Germany-Poland game, there were more arrests for disorder than there have been since the 1998 World Cup in France, when England fans did pretty much go on the rampage in France, and those horrible scenes in Marseille.
Can I just say, I was in Marseille. I saw those scenes. And it makes you, frankly, deeply, deeply ashamed.
Doesn't it just? I was in Lens.
Utter morons.
I was in Lens the match after Marseille, right, as an England fan. I skived off work to go and watch the Colombia game. And my goodness me, I worked for Bloomberg at the time.
Right.
And my goodness me, you were made to feel like, I mean, sort of rightly, actually, because of what had happened in Marseille, you were made to feel like you were sort of marched through the street with police cordons everywhere.
Yeah.
You were just like, you are not going to be allowed to have any sort of freedom because look what happens when you do.
Yeah. I mean, I think those days are behind England, I would hope.
I would hope so.
Although, let's just be honest, you do just get a load of young lads, and actually they're not even young, some of them, people who work in the city well into their 30s, who just get tanked up and then utterly disgrace themselves and us.
Mm.
In these beautiful town squares across Europe.
And you just wish it didn't happen.
But you do feel that Trump's America probably won't give them a very warm embrace.
Mm.
So they're unlikely to make the journey this summer. When, of course, England men are going to win the World Cup. So this is a very significant tournament, certainly for those of us who care about these things. Is it in any way possible that Russia could be admitted to international football? It's not, is it?
Well, I mean, the International Paralympic Committee have reinstated Russia. I mean, practically that hasn't done anything because there were four governing bodies involved in those. Three of them said no, absolutely not. And one of them, ice hockey, said yes, but it was too late for Russia to start qualifying. So, you know, the movements have been made to reinstate Russia into global sport. We have the Winter Olympics starting this weekend,
yeah,
in Milan Cortina, and Russian athletes will once again compete under a neutral flag. But they are competing, and everyone knows who they actually compete for. So, yes, I mean, it is not beyond the realms that Russia could return to international football. And Gianni Infantino saying this now is pretty much the first step in it happening. He said a few years ago, we're going to make the World Cup from 32 teams to 48. And everyone went, that's just ridiculous. That's like a quarter of everybody who plays football qualifying for the World Cup finals. You'll have teams like Cape Verde at the World Cup.
Yeah.
And guess what? We've got a 48-team World Cup happening across three countries, America, Canada and Mexico, and Cape Verde have qualified.
Yeah, and those, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sure loads of other people are as well. Is there any chance at all that, in fact, we might pull out of the World Cup if some of Trump's, well, I don't know. I mean, can you imagine the furore in this country if the beleaguered Sir Keir Starmer had to withdraw the British teams from that tournament?
I mean, I think that's quite a long way down the line. I mean, you know, I was sort of looking at sort of big sporting boycotts, and obviously you had 1984 in the Olympics, and then, you know, the 1988 Olympics were boycotted by the Soviet Union. So that was the sort of heyday for sporting boycotts. But since then, there's been a bit of talk, but no real I mean, it would be astonishing, and a lot would have to happen, you know, in Greenland and elsewhere,
yeah,
if there was even going to be sort of serious talk about England pulling out, okay, of the World Cup, and Scotland, of course.
Yeah, the immediate threat to Greenland seems to have seems to have gone. But look, who knows? I'm speaking on Tuesday at almost 3:30. Could all be different tomorrow. The FIFA Peace Prize that Donald Trump got, I mean, Infantino is trying to justify it. What does he say?
He says, objectively, it should have been a Nobel Prize. Is what,
right,
he says, and he says, look, I was completely right. They basically, what FIFA did was make up this prize to give to Donald Trump, and he does like a bit of that. I mean, at the 2018 World Cup in Russia, he was given an award by Vladimir Putin that again was a sort of made up award of in the same sort of umbrella of "Aren't you wonderful?" Yes, thank you, aren't you wonderful? And that's what's going on here. I was looking about how much power he really has. I mean, what needs to happen? Because he technically could get voted out by the FIFA Council.
Mm.
But it's very theoretical. He's just been voted in again in 2023. He'll get voted in again in 2027. So, you know, he does...
Blimey, he's around forever, this
fella. Yeah, he does wield the power.
Right, OK. And what is his skill set?
I mean, he is obviously a very good political operator. And there is that sort of, that's, I don't want to say murky, but it certainly has been murky in the past, world of kind of sports politics. And you have these sort of kingpins, and that's what he is. Mm. He's, you know, he rises to the surface, to the top. He likes the sound of his own voice. You know, this interview that he gave today, saying that, you know, let's reinstate Russia. He quite likes doing that. And he wields the power, and he has a lot of support from a lot of the sort of the African bloc, for example, the South American bloc. In Europe, people go, oh, no. But he goes, oh, yeah, I always get criticised by England and Germany mostly. But who are the fans buying the most tickets for the USA World Cup? England and Germany.
Is that true?
Mm. Okay. Yeah, and the USA, obviously.
Suggest that people other than myself are sharing my confidence.
Yeah.
okay, so I was reading actually about England's hotel. I mean, it looks absolutely lovely. They've booked a hotel in, I think it's somewhere in Kansas, because they've chosen somewhere right in the middle of the country, because the journey times, they're flying, so that it probably isn't all that long. But obviously it's a huge country and the games are being played right across America, although England's games are all in the USA, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Yes, they are. And as far as we're concerned in this country, they don't kick off too late. I think Scotland have got a few middle of the night games, which is a bit frustrating. But yes, huge journeys for the fans, huge expense for the fans. I mean, he did do a little U-turn on the ticket prices at the World Cup, and so there are some tickets now available for £60, but largely they're several hundred, and for the finals and semi-finals, several thousand pounds, even for the cheapest ones.
But also, it is the flights, because you know the airlines just went straight in with their algorithms to put the flights up any time around those. And I know people who are trying to buy cheaper flights to go into South America or Central America and then travel through. But an awful lot of people are very worried about border control. They're very worried about doing these huge journeys, and the points of entry into America just may not be very simple anymore. You've got a lot to think about if you want to go and attend this World Cup.
And that's if you're an England or a Scotland fan.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a fan from, you know, one of the countries who's qualified, who don't have pretty easy access to the USA, you know, Donald Trump and FIFA are saying, oh, it's going to be fine. But is it really going to be fine?
Well, I suspect not.
It's a good question, Vassos. Is it?
But let's just be optimistic. Scotland, I think they're playing Brazil, aren't they? Mm. Is it their opening game is against Brazil?
I think it might be. Yeah.
I've got my wall chart up already, you see, at home. But England, I mean, this has got to be, my lifetime, England's men's greatest chance of winning.
You would think so. We have a particularly stellar generation of players who happen to be generally quite nice young men. You know, they want to play for England. They buy into this. You know, Gareth Southgate started this atmosphere in the England squad, and Thomas Tuchel seems to be continuing it, but with a little bit more of an iron fist. And we have, we're paying him a lot of money, the FA, we have hired a winner to win us the World Cup. His contract doesn't extend beyond that.
Right.
So this is, you know, this is your job, Thomas. Go and win the World Cup, please. It'd be lovely.
Do we know how much he's getting? Is it well over a squillion?
Oh, yeah.
Is it? Mm. Okay. Right. Thank you very much. I just realised that in my lifetime, England men did, in fact, win the World Cup. So I'm just acknowledging that. I just need to make that clear. I was very, very young indeed. Yes, in fact, I was two. Two? You weren't even alive.
No, I wasn't alive. So far today, we've heard how old Jane is and how young she is, and I just don't know where to go, Vassos. I'm just going to stay out of it completely.
Very, very confusing. Vassos, thank you.
Thank you.
We will be seeing Vassos every day on this programme in the yet-to-be-confirmed title slot.
We're still mulling it over, aren't we?
Yeah.
We both liked Thought Sport.
Thought Sport is good, but we've also still got on the podium Pause for Sport. Yeah. And what was the other one?
Sport for the Day.
And Sport for the Day. Mm. I think we should chuck it out to a democratic vote.
I mean, Sport Thought is a little bit more on message, because just above us is Talk Sport.
Yeah, and we get that.
That's nice. Yeah. And I don't like the word pause.
No.
It's a bit pausey.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. So maybe it is Thought Sport.
Okay. Well, Well, thank you anyway. Vassos is going to be with us Monday to Thursday at this time. If you want more on that story about possibly Russia going back to the international world of football, you can go to thetimes.com and head to the sports section.
We've had a fantastic series of messages in this afternoon from Tim. His first one said, "On my way, we'll stop at Aldi, kiss, kiss." And the second one said, "Ignore the last message." So just keep us posted, Tim. Coming up, Virgin Radio DJ Emma B will be here to tell us why she is running the London Marathon. Let's get a check on the latest news headlines. It's 3:31. Here's Stuart Willie.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Peter Mandelson is to step down from the House of Lords. It follows the latest revelations about his relationship with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Lord Forsyth, Speaker of the Lords, made the announcement.
The Clerk of the Parliament has today received notification from Lord Mandelson of his intention to retire from the House, effective from 4th February. I will formally notify this to the House tomorrow in the usual way.
It comes as the Metropolitan Police say they've received a referral from government after Downing Street passed on information relating to Lord Mandelson. Documents from the Epstein files suggest the former business secretary passed on sensitive market information to the convicted paedophile in 2009. A 13-year-old's been arrested following an e-bike crash involving a pregnant woman whose baby has since been born and is in a serious condition. It happened last week in Poole, and the rider reportedly failed to stop at the scene. A school failed to act on 130 violent incidents by a boy who went on to kill a 15-year-old. That's according to an independent review which heard Muhammad Umar Khan was spotted with an axe in the months before he murdered Harvey Wilgoose. And a teenage boy swam for 2.5 miles off the coast of Western Australia and saved his family who had been swept out to sea. Austin Appleby managed to raise the alarm so rescuers could help his brother, sister and mother. For a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
This is Times Radio.
Life is short. The world is big. See more of it with Wild Frontiers. Experience the soul of Georgia through traditional winemaking. Find your Zen on ancient pilgrimage routes in Japan. Or enjoy a 1,000-star experience in a yurt camp on the Silk Road. Wild Frontiers' expertly crafted journeys take you further, so you can wander often, wonder always, and worry never. For small group tours and tailor-made adventures, visit wildfrontierstravel.com.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Ever wondered how you could spend less and experience more on your holiday? Wonder no more. With Riviera Travel, save 10% off all 2026 holidays. That's right, every single one. With so much included, that means less guesswork, more guidance. Less worry, more wow. And less hassle, more holiday. On river cruises, tours and solo holidays worldwide. It's a wonder why you'd choose anyone else. Book today with Riviera Travel. Abta and Atoll protected.
Wake up to a brighter breakfast. Times Radio Breakfast. 7 days a week from 6 a.m.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Are you dreaming of a new kitchen? Let Wix guide you through the wide range of stunning styles, appliances and worktops. Kitchens start from under £3,000. Get started by booking your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Now, Kate has confused us all because she has sent with a thumbs up emoji, sport thought, as a suggestion, but we were saying thought sport. Yeah, I like sport thought.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. We'll get there by Friday, won't we?
Well, Thursday, hopefully, because we're not here on Friday.
That's very true. Emma B has had a tough time of it. Breast cancer, surgery, the pressures of ageing parents and kids. So at what point did she get up of a morning and think, I'll tell you what will help all of this. I'll start training to run the London Marathon. It's a question at the start of her podcast where she talks to other people who have run or are planning to run the race. And Emma B has made the long journey down from 3 floors above us at Times Towers where she DJs for Virgin Radio. She has quite the music pedigree, originally working for Creation Records alongside Oasis and Primal Scream. And for years, Emma presented Sunday Surgery on Radio 1. So you are a proper radio lady. Welcome to our studio.
Thank you, proper radio ladies. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm honoured.
Quite often we see you on the little screen as we come in because we've got screens of all the other studios available in the building. So it's very, very nice to see you here in person.
Well, thank you very
much. Shall we start with that question? When was the morning when you got up and you thought, yeah, 26.2 miles, that's going to be me?
I that was never anything that I got up and thought at all. I've never got up and thought that. I've always been one of those people that stood by the sides, like many of us, cheering from the sides and cheering for people, fans, friendly, you know, friends and family and colleagues, and just gone, off you trot. Fabulous. Good for you. You're going to feel great at the end of this. That's magnificent work. And I can't remember once ever kind of going, it's for me. And then I got sick. I had what could only be described as a breakdown, and my life unraveled. It just unraveled. Everything, personal life, career, health, friendships, everything just unraveled. And I spent the best part of 3 years on the sofa, watching telly, drinking too much red wine, and slowly by slowly, with a lot of help and a lot of support and a lot of very kind people, I kind of managed to get my, you know, up off the sofa and out the front door. And it was offered to me as a challenge. And I, you know, and I'm precocious at the best of times, but, you know, I really normally would have just gone, yeah, totally. Why not? Let's do it. And instantly regretted it. And on this occasion, I just, the person who said, do you run? And I said, no. And they said, have you ever thought about it? And I said, no. And they said, there's this opportunity. And I was starting to feel, for the sort of 6 months, I had felt more like myself than I had in 10 years. And I felt stronger and better. And I'd lost a bit of weight. And I was, you know, getting up and doing things. And I went away and I thought about it. And I thought about it really, really, really long and hard, because it's you know, it's just disrespectful to all the people that, you know, try and get places in the ballot and train religiously for it and, you know, want to do it, to not take something like that seriously. So I did. I went away and I thought about it, and I thought, if now, when? If not now, when? I think one of the things that happens when you unravel and things go really badly is that structure and challenges, structure and something to focus on, is always super, super helpful. I am appalling without structure around me. And certainly when I'm, you know, in the depths of I was in the pits and really super depressed, and I wasn't working, not having a structure compounded that massively.
Yeah. What do you think it is about running? Because you're by no means the only person who has found a real salvation in running.
Mm-hmm. It goes from the very simple bits, which are being outside, you know, literally being outside in the elements, whether that's fresh air, you know, that's the simple bit of it, right through to finding time, carving out time for yourself, and saying, no, this is what I'm going to do at this stage in the day. And that's not for, because I need to do anything. It's not attached to anything. Do you know what I mean? You go shopping because you want to look nice, because there's something that you're going to, or you go to, everything has strings, and there's no strings to it. It's not, you're not doing it for anybody else but yourself, right through to the obvious health benefits, right through to those buzzwords like, you know, mindfulness and being in touch with your breath and, you know, focusing, thinking, not being stimulated by anything else other than, you know, what's going on around you. So it's a raft of things, but I am starting to, when I get a bit stressed or anxious, kind of going, you know what, I'll put my shoes on and go for a run, which is extraordinary for anyone who knows me. And that's taken. So I started in October And that's so it's taken till, you know, how many months to kind of start feeling like that, which is interesting.
Do you run, I was going to say naked, but I meant actually without listening to anything.
Yes. So you know,
because I couldn't do that.
No, well, I didn't think I could either. And then I didn't think, and I've always run with music. I'm a music person. I've always run with music. And then we did a 10K race the other day and I got a medal. And I didn't run with any music then and it was lovely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It was really nice. I think sometimes when the going has got tough, I've definitely turned the music on. But, you know, I'm trying lots of things. And that's the lovely thing about the podcast as well. It's sort of this gathering information exercise to kind of go, well, what do you do? What helps you? And we've been asking all these questions about whether people run with music or not, whether they run with their specs on, whether they run with, you know, contact lenses in. And it's a very an unexpected surprise of mine as well, that it's a very welcoming environment. People want to share.
And you don't spare the horses. I mean, you're quite honest about having too big a Chinese and then going for a run the next day, and that hasn't worked out for you, Emma, at all.
Honestly, it was a dreadful idea. Don't have the Chinese in a beer the night before.
No, let's not do that.
Don't do that.
But I wonder about that pressure, because, I mean, there is a huge amount of pressure on you to run in the London Marathon, whereas, you know, an awful lot of people will completely hear what you're saying about what running can bring to you, but they haven't got that thing at the end that is saying, and you've got to show the world that you can do it.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you as well, I think it's really interesting in these days of, you know, social media, which can be a blessing, it can be a curse as well. And the last week I've really struggled, because you get bombarded instantly by running content, 80% of which involves girls who are perfect and are 25, and that's what they do for a living. And, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do with the podcast is, it is a big sweaty mess of a podcast. It's a big sweaty mess of a race. I want to be around people who will walk a bit and who will run a bit. And I want to be around people who are not chasing PBs and trying to do it in certain times, because what it's brought to me is, you know, I don't know about you guys, but sport was always presented to me in two ways. Firstly, at school, as something competitive. I was never picked. We did a bit of netball, I did a bit of tennis, messed around because you had to. I hated athletics day. I hated sports day because I couldn't run and I was always beaten. I never got picked for first teams. And then as a way to lose weight. So there are the two ways that sport has always been presented to me, is this way that you either better yourself, which means look better, improve the way you look, or win. And that is ludicrous. That's a ludicrous way to view something that is really, really enjoyable and really good for you, no matter how good you are at it, you know?
And is there a danger, though, in entering something that is above your ability? Do you worry at all about that?
I mean, look, Fee, I can walk it in 8 hours, so I'm relying on that.
Okay. Do they let you finish
you can.
The course?
Yeah, you can. Okay. You can. I think there is, you know, and that's why I did really think about it. And, you know, I'm training a lot. I went to the GPs. Anybody who's starting something like this, go and get yourself checked out. Please don't start trying to run marathons if you've got, you know, high blood pressure and heart issues and stuff like that. You must, you know, go and get all
this.
And
you're doing this with British Heart Foundation.
Yeah, and we're doing it with British Heart Foundation. And, you know, there are obvious benefits that are talked about a lot about physical exercise for people going through, whether you're recovering from cancer and a diagnosis and treatment. I think the thinking on that is changing quite rapidly as well, is that, you know, there was a time when rest was the advice, and now actually an amount of movement is being encouraged, and the same with heart disease. As long as it's all under the guidance of medical professionals and you know what you're doing, you know, the event itself means to me that it is something that I have committed to and taken seriously consistently for a certain amount of time, that makes me feel so much better, I can't even tell you. And I can't remember the last time I did that.
If you are running to have time to yourself, does it worry you that you're entering a race where that is the last thing that's going to happen to you? And I'll tell you why. I've only ever done one kind of long distance thing, and it was a swimathon.
Oh, God.
And it was a very, very long swimathon. I think it was 100 lengths or something. And I'd enjoyed the build up to it and the training for it so much because, like you, it was a place that I could go to where nobody could phone me. I went without the kids, you know, it was just lovely, lovely me time. And then I remember turning up in the pool on the day and thinking, I could not have got this more wrong. This is hundreds of people.
Did somebody kick your goggles off?
Up somebody's feet with somebody up my feet. It was such a different environment. And I thought, how stupid am I not to have thought that through? Do you think that?
Do you know what? I think there are two different things. There's the training, which means one thing to you. The day is a celebration, isn't it? The day's a celebration. I've swum amongst lots of people in a race before. It's hideous. It's scary and hideous. And I think you kind of just, So Chris Evans from the Breakfast Show on Virgin Radio, and him and
just don't give him any more publicity.
Yeah, I know. He. But you know what? Consistently, everybody who says that they've run the marathon, just said the day itself is life changing. Whether that is because you are for one day part of this massive community of people that have all done the same thing, whether that's because you're raising money for friends and family who have been through stuff, whether that's being in London and, you know, just celebrating our great, this, you know, great city and pounding the streets doing something really difficult. I don't know, but absolutely everybody has said it's life changing, and who wouldn't want to kind of dip your toe into that a little bit?
Well, we wish you the very, very best.
We really do.
Of luck for that.
Thank
and
you.
Obviously the podcast is taking you all the way up to the London Marathon, so for
it
people
is.
Who are involved in it or who want to maybe think about entering it in future, that it's absolutely the place to go. Can we talk about music, please?
Yes.
Because I wonder what your thoughts are about the changing nature of the female voice in music, whether it's doing this in a studio, playing other people's music, whether it's being the talent themselves. Because you started your music career in a very, very blokey place.
Oh, my God.
Creation Records, that kind of time, that kind of 90s sound, the boys in the band, big hairy guitar bands. I wonder how it seems to you now.
I mean, how good was the Grammys with Olivia Dean and Lola Young? I think Lady Gaga got up and spoke very passionately about female musicians and writers really working hard and being brave to hold on to their ideas. To not be swayed in studios, to try really hard to do that, to surround yourself with people who are going to enable you to hold on to your ideas, to learn how to produce, to write, to really dig down and lean into ownership of your music. And I think that's happening a lot more. I mean, it's fabulous that the likes of Olivia Dean, she is so prolific and smart. And I can't wait to see what happens with her. I think also with, you know, there was a very sort of standard way of being perceived as a female musician in the 90s, early 90s. And everybody, you know, then before Britpop happened. And if you were going to be a female musician, you were going to be a pop star, and you would be dressed and media trained, and you would end up looking and sounding like Britney Spears, and you would read the script, and that would be it. And I love the fact that you can have women who look like Chappell Roan, who turned up to the Grammys with her fantastic nipple dress that she was wearing and covered in tattoos. And she's an absolute powerhouse of a writing animal. She's incredible. And so clearly it's working. I think it's going to be interesting to see where Glastonbury goes next year.
In terms of a female headliner. They've got to, haven't they?
Well, we all thought it was going to happen last year, that potentially it could have been three, and it wasn't. But I think it's time. I think it's going to be, you know, you could quite happily have three across the Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. I think so, you know, it's going to happen at some point. But I think if you... It's been lovely to see, and it will happen at the Brit Awards as well in February. Yeah. The women will do really well.
I think it's such an opportunity to celebrate what's happened,
isn't
actually.
It?
I completely agree. And Jane and I have been watching the Take That documentary, together, separately. We're not married. We're just an on-air couple.
It's all nonsense. But, she spins this line.
Does she? Yes,
it's pathetic, really.
Leave her alone, me.
One of the things that I've really noticed is when they pan to the crowd, you know, when they were huge yeah. boy bands back in the day, you know, it is just wall to wall screaming young girls. And now if you pan to a crowd with Chapel Roan, it is the same young screaming girls. And you just think, what a fantastic thing has yeah. happened within a generation, that kind of influence has been recognised and is commercially viable. It is what headlines Reading, it really is a place to be, isn't it? A comfortable place to be yeah. for young independent women in the crowd or on the stage.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you know, the nature of big record companies now has changed significantly. And, you know, what's also really lovely to see is that so many young artists are releasing on their own labels. You know, that's how they're starting off. So, you know, there's a huge, everybody talks about the big record deal. It's a massive pressure if you're signed by a huge record label for hundreds of thousands of pounds on the 3-album deal to try and keep that going. And they're so savvy now about how you kind of introduce yourself. And whilst I think, you know, people of our generation kind of go, what do you mean they launched a record on TikTok? It is so organic. You have to work for that. Those are the stages of the small music venues that don't necessarily exist and are profitable anymore. They work for that. And it's a fantastic way to get their way up there.
Yeah. Can we talk about one of the downsides
yes.
of being a woman? You had a horrendous encounter with Wayne Cousins, the man who murdered Sarah Everard.
Yeah.
He exposed himself to you. I think it was back in 2008, wasn't it? You reported it to the police. What happened when you reported it?
On the day...
Yeah, and subsequently?
So I was coming home from dropping my eldest off. I had my baby in the buggy. I came past. It happened. I went into the nearest shop I could go into, and they laughed a bit. And I said, can I stay here until he's gone? I just stayed there, and then I got home and I called the police immediately, and they came over and took a statement, and we went into some great detail, the detail of which was what carried it forward to be investigated again further and all the way to CPS. And they thought it was quite funny. And they thought it was awkward and embarrassing. And
what do you mean funny?
They laughed.
So they thought it was an amusing incident that had happened
yeah.
to you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if for anybody who's been in a similar situation when somebody exposes themselves to you and you report it, you describe what happened. And they, I don't know whether they felt awkward or what, but they laughed. And at that point, I said to them, and my husband remember saying to them, I hope that's all he needs to do.
What subsequently happened? When did you realise who it was that had indecently exposed himself to you?
I saw it on the telly, like everybody else, that, you know, that shocking, horrendous, those news reports. And I said to Damien, I said to my husband, I said, that's him. And I recognised him immediately. And we worked out who to speak to. We spoke to them. Eventually, the police came over. We spoke again. I was interviewed a number of times. It formed part of their investigation. It was a really long time ago, and they took it all the way to CPS. But I think by that point, it had sort of run its course a little
sure.
bit.
But the reaction that the police officers had to you initially when you were
yeah.
reporting that is such a dangerous place, isn't it, to be in, where you think that something like that is funny. And whether or not it is because you're embarrassed, that you don't want to have to describe
yeah.
something you've seen, whatever it is, it's not Benny Hill in the bushes. It's not that.
No, he was. No. And if and you know, I feel that's why I, you know, it was dangerous.
Yeah,
it was dangerous. It was dangerous, and it was aggressive, and it was purposeful. It was intentional. It was designed to scare me, and it did.
And it is often behaviour shown by men who then progress to far, far worse.
Oh, that was, I mean, I, you know, and I've said it before. I'm not saying anything that I haven't said before, but you know, he was a dangerous man, and I remember very clearly saying to the police officers, I really hope that's all he needs to do, because it was very clear to me that was not a man that was in any shape or form finished.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry we had to go there, but thank you very much indeed. Emma, and lovely to talk to you ahead of the marathon. Keep us posted.
And you'll be with us next year then?
Yes, of course.
Almost certainly.
Of course, definitely.
Excellent.
I've got both fingers crossed behind my back. But lovely to see you in the studio. Thank you very much for coming in.
What is the name of the podcast?
The podcast is called I Can Run a Marathon, and you can watch it on Virgin Radio YouTube, and you can get it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
And Jamie, he's listening, says, yes. Emma B put up with me for a day when I came in to do work experience at Radio 1. She won't remember, but she was very kind.
Oh, Jamie, gosh, thank goodness.
Yeah, well, exactly. He wouldn't have written if you'd been an absolute moon. I'm sure you wouldn't have been. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay on Times Radio, hosting an honest conversation about current affairs, well-being, lifestyle, health and wealth. Plus, don't miss Tomorrow's Home, highlighting how you can make your house more energy efficient. The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio, with the UK government's boiler upgrade scheme. You could upgrade your heating with a £7,500 heat pump grant. Visit gov.uk/cleanenergy to check eligibility.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
When you leave a gift in your will to guide dogs, where could it lead? It might lead to a mum and dad feeling hopeful about their child's future.
When we were told originally that Mabel was blind, I kind of envisioned that she wouldn't be able to do anything as she grew up.
I feel good about Mabel's future now. There's no limit on what she can do.
Your gift to guide dogs could lead to a future where lives are transformed. Find out how to make your life-changing will for free. Search Guide Dogs, Free Wills.
Guide Dogs.
Life is short. The world is big. See more of it with Wild Frontiers. Experience the soul of Georgia through traditional winemaking. Find your zen on ancient pilgrimage routes in Japan. Or enjoy a 1,000-star experience in a yurt camp on the Silk Road. Wild Frontiers' expertly crafted journeys take you further, so you can wander often, wonder always, and worry never. For small group tours and tailor-made adventures, visit wildfrontierstravel.com.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Emma B was our guest this afternoon. Tomorrow, at the same time, we're going to be talking to Steve Crawshaw, a leading journalist who's written an incredibly impressive book, tough reading at times. It's called Prosecuting the Powerful, War Crimes and the Battle for Justice. So he's going to be our guest tomorrow afternoon. I think some interesting questions for him. On the cover of that book, he's got Putin, Netanyahu and Assad. And, of course, all have... well, shall we say, done all sorts of hideous things. But of the three men on the cover of that book, Assad is, he's living in Moscow, isn't he, in a sort of bizarre retirement world funded by his mate Vlad.
He's very peculiar. Yeah, he's in the cul-de-sac of exiled dictators, isn't he?
Yeah. Yes.
Just busy.
Done dictating is where he lives. Right. Really unpleasant man. And I don't mean to be facetious about the individual involved. Right. So that Steve Crawshaw is our guest tomorrow afternoon. John Pienaar awaits. Then Kate Borsow will guide you through the rest of the evening. But you can bet your life if there's anything happening in the world, you'll hear about it with us. Don't forget our podcast Off Air with Jane and Fee, which comes your way about 6 o'clock tonight. Our producer today was Felix Forbes. Our technical operator was not Ryan Boyden. It was James again, wasn't it?
No, it's Adam Heaton.
It's Adam. Yeah. Of course it is. That's right. Up next is John. Sorry, Adam. John is with you between 4 and 7. Have a good night.
across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you, Fee. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar, and this is Times Radio Drive. The headlines. The Lord Speaker has announced that Peter Mandelson is stepping down from the House of Lords. And the Cabinet Office refers material to the police after reviewing documents in the Epstein files suggesting sensitive information was leaked. And coming up, I'll be asking a former director of public prosecutions what evidence the police will be looking for and whether the US Department of Justice might help the investigation. And I'll be talking to a former Clinton advisor as both Bill and Hillary Clinton agree to testify before Congress about their relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
This is Times Radio.
And here's the news with Stuart Willey.
John, thank you. Good afternoon. Peter Mandelson is to step down from the House of Lords tomorrow. It follows the latest revelations about his relationship with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Earlier, the Prime Minister threatened legislation within weeks to strip Mandelson of his title. Lord Forsyth, Speaker of the Lords, made the announcement.
The Clerk of the Parliament has today received notification from Lord Mandelson of his intention to retire from the House, effective from 4th February. I will formally notify this to the House tomorrow in the usual way.
It comes as the Metropolitan Police say they've received a referral from government after Downing Street passed on information relating to Lord Mandelson. Documents from the Epstein files suggest he forwarded sensitive market information to the disgraced financier in 2009. Lord Mandelson says any money he received from Epstein didn't influence decisions he took while in office. Legal commentator Joshua Rosenberg says the offence of misconduct in public office can bring tough penalties.
The current offence has a maximum penalty of life imprisonment. Now that sounds rather dramatic, and the reason for that is that Parliament has never laid down any sentence. I'm not saying you would get life imprisonment, but you could get a lengthy prison sentence if appropriate. What's proposed in the new offence and the maximum penalty for that would be 10 years.
Elsewhere, around 1 million people may have missed the self-assessment tax deadline and now face a £100 penalty. HMRC says 11.5 million returns were received, with 500,000 taxpayers waiting until the final day. A court has heard women prisoners are being treated as pawns for political gain at the start of a case challenging a Scottish government policy on transgender prisoners. The campaign group For Women Scotland, which brought last year's Supreme Court case, says it's wrong that some trans women are held in women's prisons. Daniel Sanderson is the Times' Scotland political editor.
So what the Scottish government are arguing is that, yes, the Supreme Court found that for the purposes of the Equality Act, sex is based on biology, but they are claiming that trans prisoners also have rights under the European Convention of Human Rights, which they are also obliged to uphold.
Thousands of Ukrainians are without power or heating as temperatures hit minus 20. President Volodymyr Zelensky accused Russia of exploiting a US-backed energy truce to stockpile and then attack with hundreds of drones and missiles. Overnight attacks come a day before a second round of trilateral talks between Moscow, Kyiv and Washington in Abu Dhabi tomorrow. And a minister is suggesting the BBC and Channel 4 could merge to help them better compete with YouTube and Netflix. Ian Murray, the Creative Industries Minister, says it would allow deeper and more strategic partnerships as audiences turn to streaming platforms. A report last month found YouTube is the second most watched video service ahead of ITV. For a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker, John Pienaar at Drive on Times Radio.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. Well, today I will have more for you, much more, on the Peter Mandelson scandal, on the day that he's announced that he's stepping down, leaving the House of Lords. And we are going to be asking a question that would have been unimaginable 48 hours ago. Was Peter Mandelson not only passing highly market-sensitive, cabinet-level info to a billionaire convicted paedophile, but was Jeffrey Epstein also in cahoots with the Russian KGB spy agency? It is possible. It is possible Peter Mandelson will be helping the police with their inquiries, as they say, of suspected criminals within the next day or two. Now, that is potentially much more perilous for Mandelson than having to resign as a peer, which he announced he's doing an hour or so ago. Now, we don't know, but we do know, don't we, that if there is no police investigation into him passing secret, highly market-sensitive information to a billionaire financier and a convicted paedophile while he was serving as Britain's business secretary, would there be a national outcry? The police could surely expect to be accused of ducking an investigation that would prolong the government and the Prime Minister's embarrassment. There'd even be voices muttering police had acted or not acted under political pressure. Now, that may well be unfair. It would nonetheless be embarrassing. And here's why the whole scandal has suddenly got more troubling. Earlier this afternoon, the Polish Prime Minister, Donald Tusk, told a news conference the evidence that Epstein flew in young East European women for sex with his rich and powerful friends supported the suspicion that he was orchestrating a so-called KGB honey trap. Now, just imagine if it turns out Lord Mandelson was passing not just priceless market info, but cabinet-level political gossip, however inadvertently, to a Russian asset. Just imagine the row there would be about that. In any event, police are now busy investigating whether Mandelson himself should face criminal charges. Will the police investigate him for misconduct in public life? And if not, why not? We're going to be hearing later on the programme the damning emails should be enough, so long as it's shown that Mandelson sent them. He claims he's forgotten. His defence hasn't stopped the Prime Minister saying he needs to be out of the House of Lords, but would it shield him from the police? And crucially, could police and prosecutors prove that Mandelson did send those extraordinary emails to Epstein? If so, Lord Mandelson has a lot more to worry about than being stripped of his peerage. So does he? Let's find out together. Tell me what you're thinking. Text me 87222. Start with the word Times or a tweet to at Times Radio. Now, just over an hour ago, the Lord Speaker in the House of Lords, Lord Forsyth, made this announcement.
My Lords, given the public interest and for the convenience of the House, I've decided to inform the House that the Clerk of the Parliaments has today received notification from Lord Mandelson of his intention to retire from the House, effective from 4th February. I will formally notify this to the House tomorrow in the usual way.
And that was the announcement. The chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Labour MP, Emily Thornberry, said there were more questions to answer.
This is so deliberate and so treacherous. I'm of the view that the whole House of Lords thing is a little bit of a sideshow and that the behaviour is so bad that it's something that the police should be investigating.
Now, that was a sentiment echoed by the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch.
We need to see whether or not Peter Mandelson has done something which is a criminal offence. That's where we need to start. We can spend a lot of time talking about how the Lords should be reformed. What I want to see is justice. The allegations that we're hearing about misconduct in public office, let's investigate that.
Emily Thornberry there. Let's catch up with Anna Mihailova, our political editor at Times Radio. Hi to you, Anna.
Hi, John.
Hello. So Peter Mandelson resigning from the House of Lords, I mean, jumping before he could be pushed, as it were. Will that satisfy the government? Because he's still going to carry on as a peer of the realm, I think.
Yes, so my understanding, I mean, obviously this is all very fast moving, but before Peter Mandelson resigned, we had the news that Downing Street, that Keir Starmer had asked officials to start drafting legislation to strip Peter Mandelson of his peerage. And even though Peter Mandelson has resigned from the